Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Dr. David Roberts, an expert on Saudi Arabia, the Gulf, and the wider Middle East at King's College London. Dr. Roberts, OPEC and non-OPEC oil-producing countries just agreed to a deep drop in oil production activities to stop a severe decline in prices brought on by coronavirus stoppages and closures, but even more by a recent oil war of sorts between Riyadh and Moscow. What was that war, and who blinked?
Indeed, there's been quite an oil spat between Saudi Arabia and Russia in the past few months. And they both looked at the oil price inexorably decreasing. And each of them obviously wanted the price to go back up. Each of them was struggling, looking at their break-even price. Russia needed an oil price of around $40, $42 a barrel to break even with their economy. Saudi are in a worse situation. It's up in the mid-80s for Saudi Arabia, and they didn't really know what to do. Initial discussions kind of failed. Each wanted the other to take a bit of the pain, to stop pumping as much oil and, of course, therefore take less revenue. And they couldn't come to agreement. Then, of course, Saudi Arabia took things further, promised cuts in oil prices, promised to pump more oil at the same time, which kind of crashed the price. And this is even set against the backdrop of coronavirus, of course. So Saudi increased supply at the same time as coronavirus had chopped worldwide demand 30 to 35%. You can't predict these things, as it were. They sort of hoped for the best. And I think each side didn't quite appreciate how bad things would get. Each sort of miscalculated slightly. And so with the oil price really kind of cratering, there's some historic kind of low numbers here. You ironically had President Trump stepping in, who wanted to save the American shale oil industry, a couple of 100,000 US jobs there. So usually you have US presidents desperate to get the oil price down for Americans to pay less at the pump. But here you had Trump wanting the opposite. And so with everyone hurting really quite significantly, they came to an agreement. 10% cuts in production are very, very significant. Still probably not enough to get the price really back up there, but it might stabilize the oil price in kind of $40 a barrel for the rest of the year. We don't know, of course, but those are kind of the expectations. So everyone kind of blinked at the same time, really, I feel.
You are listening to Dr. David Roberts, an expert on Saudi Arabia, the Gulf, and the wider Middle East at King's College London. What does the accord do for the public image of Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman? He's been hammered by the Khashoggi killing, human rights issues at home, his conduct of the fighting against Houthi rebels in Yemen, and even for the way he's handled the coronavirus pandemic, with the kingdom far and away leading all Sunni Gulf countries in confirmed cases and deaths. He also came under sharp pressure from the U.S. to agree to the oil accord. Is he weak? Is he strong?
I don't particularly see this as having many negative ramifications on the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, to be perfectly honest. He's come under vast amounts of criticism, exactly as you outline, in recent months and in recent years. But he controls his country fairly completely. He is the central actor in the security and defense spheres. He's the central actor in political spheres and, of course, when it comes to all sorts of economic issues as well, including the whip hand of Aramco, the Saudi Arabian oil company. And so, yes, the things aren't going wonderfully well, but then again, everyone's in a similar boat there. The Saudi response to coronavirus, you know, it's difficult to kind of, well, it's difficult to know at the moment precisely how good or bad things are. With all states and the data, we need to be a little bit circumspect at the moment. But I don't think it's necessarily as bad as it's being painted. And, well, I just go back to the fundamental point. He controls, I think, most of the levers of power. There's no particularly obvious opposition. And so I think with having taken this lead in stabilizing the oil price, it's not where they need it, but it's better. I think he can call that a win, to be perfectly honest.
The Crown Prince established a program, Vision 2030, which, considering the kingdom's limited oil reserves, is designed to wean it from petroleum as its sole source of income. Clearly an adjunct of that program was the IPO of Saudi Arabia's state-owned oil company, Aramco. But oil prices are in the pits, along with Aramco's share prices. There's a pandemic. What does all this mean for the Crown Prince's vision?
Where this issue does pose a real problem for Mohammed bin Salman is, of course, when it comes to his, you know, as you say, his Vision 2030 agenda, really. It was always going to be immensely difficult reach, to be perfectly honest. And with this worldwide recession, with the oil price around half of what Saudi Arabia needs to balance its books, it's going to make it immensely difficult. Now, Saudi Arabia, of course, has very significant foreign reserves, around $500 billion, roughly, at the moment, which means that, you know, in the next couple of years, the country is fine. But the IPO, Vision 2030, it's never been about, you know, 2021, 22, 23. It's been about 2030. It's been about as and when these foreign reserves are really running out. And Saudi has been tapping them at a significant rate at the moment. Those are the issues that we really need to think about. And some of the aspects of the vision, there's been talk of build, well, not talk, there's been plans breaking ground to build a whole new city, Neom, for example. And I just don't see that as being viable. I see that city, this, you know, building a city straight out of the desert, as going the way of similar visions in the past of King Abdullah and his economic cities, most of which never really took off. And so I suspect there'll be a pruning of the Vision 2030, of its aspirations, an alteration in its timeline, and it will struggle, and he will struggle to get it back on track, I think.
Dr. David Roberts, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.